from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Well, now, the polls may show the president up. Mitt Romney's had a string of problems. But on the first debate stage last night in Mile High, Denver, we had a real race going on. The challenger revved up.
You've been president 4 years. You said you cut the deficit in half. It's now 4 years later. We still have trillion-dollar deficits.
The incumbent saying, don't go back.
Are we going to double down on the top-down economic policies that helped to get us into this mess?
This hour On Point, Barack Obama, Mitt Romney, and round one of the presidential debates. You can join the conversation. Who took it? How? What did you see on that stage last night in Denver? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us now from New York is Gail Collins, sharp, funny, big-time columnist with the New York Times. Her latest book is As Texas Goes. Gail Collins, welcome back to On Point.
Good to be here.
Good to have you. And from Nashville, John Meacham joins us. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning biographer of Andrew Jackson in American Lion, former editor of Newsweek, now executive editor at Random House. John Meacham, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks so much.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point news analyst and man for all seasons, campaign seasons, not least, Jack Beatty. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Gail, and John.
All right, Gail, you're tough on everybody over time. You've been plenty tough on Mitt Romney. And here we are this morning, and all over the place, you've got Democrats and liberals sort of gnashing their teeth and wailing. You've got Republicans doing high fives. You've got your newspaper, the New York Times, saying, you know, Republicans and many Democrats saying Mr. Obama was flat, uninspired, and defensive. What did you see last night, Gail?
Well, you know, there was the flat, uninspired, defensive guy. Yeah, you know, the problem, and maybe we should have foreseen all this. You know, Barack Obama doesn't like debates, and, you know, he doesn't like preparing for debates. He doesn't like doing debates. He thinks they're silly, they're ridiculous, and that all showed last night. Mitt Romney has always been pretty good on these things. I mean, he really does sort of seem to like that particular format. And the bad thing for the president is it sort of feeds into that potential feeling of, well, he's a nice guy and he's certainly trying, but it's kind of depressing and we're slogging along and maybe, you know, somebody else could do better.
Jack Beatty doesn't like debates. I mean, aren't debates what democracy is about? Isn't that? I mean, you may think the format's silly. Certainly there were issues last night maybe with the moderation from Jim Lehrer. Oh, my goodness. But a president who doesn't want to engage with his challenger, who's looking to take his – I mean, maybe that's overstating it. What did you see, Jack?
Well, I saw an example of why Nick Kristof, Gail's colleague, has given the president an F for communications over the last 4 years, that he simply did not make his own case. You know, Tom, it reminded me of that line of Robert Frost that you quoted recently, a liberal is a man too broad-minded to take his own side in a quarrel. that really seemed to be what was going on. Meanwhile, look what Romney did. His convention was a failure. He knew that. What did he do? He came off the campaign trail. He devoted himself single-mindedly to debate preparation. He knew that was his one chance. And the criticism came down. Look at Romney's schedule. He's not out there. What's going on? The fundraisers were saying, what's going on? He played the chip on the moment that could change things for him. And it worked. He brought the fire. He sounded convincing. He sounded presidential.
John Meacham, here you've got President Obama's deputy campaign manager Stephanie Cutter saying that Mr. Romney scored points on style. Was it a style victory last night? Was there a substance win there as well? What did you see unfold, John?
Keep going. I think you did. I think you did both. I really do. And, you know, Jennifer Granholm, I think, the former governor of Michigan, mm-hmm. was quoted somewhere saying that the press was inevitably going to declare Mitt Romney the winner of the debate because of our inherent conflict, our inherent bias toward conflict. But
is that what's happening here? You think this is just rah-rah, we want to fight, now we've got one? I don't think so.
Let me say, because I went into this thinking, mm-hmm. beware, beware, beware. And, you know, I think it's unquestionably a smashing debate win for Romney. I was thinking about Mark Twain last night, you know, with the reports of Mitt Romney's political death have been greatly exaggerated. Yeah. But Mark Twain did die. So it doesn't mean
it doesn't mean
that he's going to win the presidency. What it does mean is that he has, I think, stopped a rush to judgment with 30 days to go. And I think you'll have folks looking anew at him. If he had turned in a poor performance, I think, let's all be honest, we would be hanging out the black crepe and, and moving on to the fiscal cliff.
Yeah. Let's listen to a little bit. Here was Mitt Romney making his case pretty passionate last night, talking about the need for economic recovery.
My priority is putting people back to work in America. They're suffering in this country. And we talk about evidence. Look at the evidence of the last 4 years. It's absolutely extraordinary. We've got 23 million people out of work or stopped looking for work in this country.
All right.
It's just, we've got, when the president took office, 32 million people on food stamps, 47 million on food stamps today. Economic growth this year, slower than last year, and last year slower than the year before. Going forward with the status quo is not going to cut it for the American people who are struggling today.
Mitt Romney fired up last night. The president was right there looking down, taking notes. He had his comebacks. But today everybody's saying, where was the edge? Here was President Obama last night saying he has a different view from Mitt Romney on how to fix the economy. Not about cutting taxes for the wealthy, he said, and just rolling back regulations.
Ultimately, it's going to be up to the voters, to you, which path we should take. Are we going to double down on the top-down economic policies that helped to get us into this mess? Or do we embrace a new economic patriotism that says America does best when the middle class does best?
Economic patriotism, trickle-down government. We got some new phrases rolling through here. We'll look at them and let's hear from our listeners. Bill in Columbia, South Carolina. Bill, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How y'all doing?
Pretty well, Bill.
I just wanted to say I thought that I'm a moderate guy, and I'm a small businessman, and I thought Mr. Romney came across as a business guy who was on top of the issues and was ready to lead the country. And I thought it was really fascinating, too, to flip through the different media channels right after the debate. I mean, CNN, I mean, David Broder said, hey, we've got a race again. Mm. Even Carville had to say something good about Mr. Romney. And then it was funny, if you flipped over to MSNBC, not that many people watch it, but those guys were going nuts. They were so angry. It was like pent-up hostility against Mr. Obama for doing so poorly. And I'm ready for the media to say he won.
Well, I think you'll hear a lot of that today. It sounds like you were working your remote control pretty hard there, Bill, and I appreciate your report. I mean, you can hear plenty. It's true. Everybody's talking. Bill Maher, you know, joked or tweeted or what I said. Bill Maher, liberal. I can't believe I'm saying this, but Obama looks like he does need a teleprompter. Of course, we know. Well, anyway, Andrew Sullivan, liberal blogger, says this is a rolling calamity for Obama. He's boring, abstract, and less human-seeming than Romney, with an exclamation mark, because that means something. That takes something. Krista in Berkshire, Vermont. Krista, you're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to say something very short. I don't believe Obama was boring at all. He was into details, and I listened to it all. And Romney, having listened to him for some time now, also, he's taught me like a smiling clown rattling off generalities. General things, and that's what he did, and he never went into details compared to Obama, who rationalized his things. He detailed his things. He thought about it before he spoke. He didn't just blurt it out. And
well, Christy, you may be right. You may be right. On the other hand, we saw Mitt Romney with a lot of, you know, 4 points and 5 points. I mean, he did have his points, no doubt. Gil Collins, smiling clown, rattling off generalities. What are you saying?
Yeah, well, you know, I think there was some of that with Romney. I mean, there was a lot of things that Mitt Romney said that either were arguably not accurate or that, you know, were being made up, that you could just not tell one way or the other. And what you were wanting from Obama is for him to say, look, stop saying that I'm going to take $700 billion out of Medicare. It's not true. Stop saying that. It's not true. And he didn't engage. And he allowed Mitt Romney to make his case, which was, I think, in some cases, a very defective case, but he didn't get any. We didn't get any help from Obama as far as arguing it.
John Meacham, what do you make if that's indeed what we saw of a sitting president, fully challenged by a Republican challenger right now in the debate, that in the final ramp to the election, who doesn't want to make his case? Did you see that?
Well, it raises two really interesting questions to me on just a purely human level. One is, and Tom, you would know this, and Jack would too. Is this, in fact, the real Mitt Romney? at long last.
I would know that. Well, I mean, we're in Massachusetts. Well, we've seen Mitt Romney a long time. But
That's what I mean.
But maybe.
I mean, is it because suddenly he wasn't having to run to the right. He gave what I would call a very mainstream conservative message. It was not anything. If you take the Republican Party orthodoxy since 1980, that was the gospel that Romney mm-hmm. was preaching. And it was not as far right as he's run in recent years. So that's one human level. Mm-hmm. One thing is was Romney effective because this is actually who he is and he's no longer trying to act. The other thing is, to what extent is President Obama worn out? You know, he did not show up to play. And I know he had to be presidential. He couldn't rise to the bait, all of that. But Ronald Reagan used to say that ultimately the camera doesn't lie. And he seemed as though he would rather be anywhere else on the planet last night than on that stage.
Celebrating an anniversary somewhere just with, tinkling music and a table for two instead. He had tens of millions. First debate on the table, and people are saying, hey, Mitt Romney rolled in there ready to go. The president did not. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about presidential debate number one and where it puts this race. Obama, Romney, nose to nose, and on that stage, it looked like a horse race. Romney strong out of the gate. Gail Collins is with us from the New York Times, hotshot columnist there, author of As Texas Goes and When Everything Changed. John Meacham is with us from Nashville, Pulitzer Prize-winning biographer of Andrew Jackson. Look for his forthcoming Thomas Jefferson, The Art of Power. Jack Beatty's here, and you can join us. What did you see side by side up there last night? Did the president show the vigor and focus to fire up a good second term? Did Romney make you think, hey, there's another Reagan? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Jim Lehrer of PBS was moderating. Mitt Romney told him right in his face he was looking to cut public broadcasting funding and PBS in particular. Okay, Jim Lehrer having a little bit of problem keeping control of the debate. It went way outside the format that he had laid out. But here was a little exchange. He asked Mitt Romney about a bipartisan budget commission, Simpson-Bowles, that had posed a way to reduce the federal deficit in 2010, on which Romney faulted the president for failing to push it through.
Will you support Simpson-Bowles?
Simpson-Bowles, the president should have grabbed that.
No, I mean, do you support Simpson-Bowles?
I have my own plan. It's not the same as Simpson-Bowles. But in my view, the president should have grabbed it. If he wanted to make some adjustments to it, take it, go to Congress, fight for it.
That's what we've done. Made some adjustments to it, and we're putting it forward before Congress right now. $4 trillion plan.
But you've been president 4 years. You've been president 4 years. Right. You said you cut the deficit in half. It's now 4 years later. We still have trillion-dollar deficits. The CBO says we'll have a $1 trillion deficit each of the next 4 years. If you're reelected, we'll get to a $1 trillion debt.
Mitt Romney, the president, agreeing there only to the fact that he's been president for 4 years. I want to look at that exchange in particular. A couple of callers first. Paul in Omaha, Nebraska. Paul, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I was telling your screener that when I sat down last night, as a independent voter who has really been struggling with who to vote for, I've really had lost faith in Romney. But as I sat down and listened as intently as I could, I really saw a substantial difference in substance. It wasn't just style. It wasn't just the aggressiveness on Romney's part. But I thought that they clearly distinguished themselves in terms of what their differences in approaches on government, in federal government versus the state government. And I liked the fact that Romney kept circling back to the fact that, yes, the health care plan in Massachusetts is successful, but it's a state plan. It's not a federal plan. And I think he drove that point home over and over again.
Paul, what about the president saying, look, Mr. Romney, your numbers don't add up. It leaves this famous $5 trillion unaccounted for, and it's going to mean higher taxes on the middle class. The president's line, Mr. Romney, you're not being forthcoming with any details here. What about that?
I think Obama is missing the point. I think he's you brought it up a moment ago in your lead-in from the commercial that Romney was a little Reagan-esque in his approach. In fact, I even saw some body language that was very Reagan-esque. I commented to my wife last night. He was coming across as saying that the growth of the economy is going to offset a lot of the revenue issues. It isn't about raising revenue just from taxes. It's raising it across the board as a byproduct of growth.
And you heard that last night. It's interesting, for the maybe for the first time, if you've been on the fence, as you say, Paul. I appreciate your call from Omaha. Let me get one more from New Haven, and we'll take it to our guest, Bonita, in New Haven, Connecticut. Bonita, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I really felt that President Obama did an excellent job last night. I felt that he stayed on point. I felt that he looked presidential. I felt that Romney looked extremely agitated, petulant, spoiled, the way that he pushed around the moderator and always had to have his point come out, even though he was saying misleading and lying. I just thought he was...
Bonita, how do you, what do you make of all the feedback this morning that's saying, hey, it's Romney's, including and maybe especially from liberal viewers?
If you want to say he won, it would be style over substance. People wanted to see a fight, a brawl. A brawl. He, quote unquote, I guess, had a fight. It was like if you're in the ring, somebody's throwing punches. But of course, you're throwing punches doesn't mean you won. And if he did win, he won on points only because of his style.
Bonita, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. Gail Collins, a rude brawler here or a Reagan-esque presidential figure?
Well, this is, I think, one of the reasons that Barack Obama hates these things. It really does, in many ways, come down to style. And the first part of this debate, when they were talking about taxes, really, unless you had it, both a calculator and a CPA there, I cannot conceive of how average voters were making any sense out of what the arguments were. So you do tend to, often in these things, get down to style. And so, therefore, it's superficial, and therefore, it's a judgment that's not based on the depth of policies being argued. I mean, they had some good arguments there. And it over and over again, and I think the president was trying to make this point over and over again, you go back to the same kind of plan that we saw from George W. Bush. You're going to cut taxes, you're going to reduce revenue, and you're going to send us back into another spiral into the deficit. You're going to do exactly the opposite of what you claim you're going to do. And I think the president tried to make that point, but he wasn't very effective.
I thought the president was a pretty stylish guy himself, Gail, not least in political circles. I mean, he won the presidency after all.
He had that one speech. He can rise to the occasion, but especially in debates, I cannot remember any debate in which I thought, wow, this guy is really, cleaning up the floor. It's just not a good venue for him.
John Meacham, our listener in Omaha, saw a little Reagan being channeled there last night, and for him that worked. And it did, as you say, harken back to that Republican message of several decades now. But Obama's kind of been campaigning on the idea that, as we heard him say, don't go back to that. Look what that did. Look where we ended up in the Great Recession.
Well, I think one of the issues the president's facing is he's in a kind of historical cul-de-sac at the moment. If you look at American history, at least post-war history, as the New Deal plus with Eisenhower essentially ratifying what Roosevelt and Truman did. It became a question of reforming the role of government, not repealing it. Then President Reagan in 1981 passes Kemp-Roth, cuts taxes, and then begins immediately raising taxes again. Only Ronald Reagan can get away with this. And that era was ratified again by President Clinton after he got clobbered in 1994, and he says the era of big government is over. So we've had two distinct eras, and I think we're at the beginning of a third, but we don't really know what it's going to be yet. And I think a lot of folks hoped that what candidate Obama was promising, which was a more less ideological, more suprapartisan approach, was a great hope in 2008, 2009. And it has not worked out, but these things don't work out in 2 and 3 year increments. But I think part of the issue the president's having, part of the problem with communicating, it's not just style. It's also the message, because I think we all know roughly what we have to do in terms of policy to have a kind of sensible fiscal clean up the fiscal house. But it's really painful and it's really awful, and it's going to cost entrenched interests, which is to say almost all of us, something. And the articulating and arguing for sacrifice at a time when, even though it's a kind of a policy crisis but feels less of an immediate political crisis in historical terms, is really difficult. And I think that's part of what's the problem. But I think that's part of the president's problem.
But, Jack, you know, President Obama's liberal backers say, yes, big things have to be done, but there's a big choice here. And you can go one way or another, and it's going to create a different kind of country. Of course, Mitt Romney's backers say the same. There was a lot of kind of this. Mitt Romney seemed to be just fine with saying, I'm not so far from the president on a number of issues. And the president struck that body language as well, but at the same time trying to say, you got a fundamental choice here. So which came across, Jeff? Fundamental choice or, you know, it's all just nods and bobs?
I thought the nods and bobs won. I thought that Mitt Romney returned from, you know, the Mitt Romney of Massachusetts seemed to be there.
Centrist,
you know, yes,
working across the aisle, Mr.
Yes,
bipartisan,
yes,
you like to say last night.
Right, and what a shot at President Obama that was. I worked with my opposition, 87% Democratic. Look what you did in Washington. Gridlock. You couldn't work with them. I can imagine some voters thinking, well, I want a guy who can work with the opposition. Of course, the analogy is imperfect, to say the least, between the conservative Republican House and the liberal Massachusetts legislature. Never mind, it works in politics. You know, Bernard Balin, who's really the great historian of the American Revolution, said there are two themes of the revolution that really define our political culture. One is the belief that power is evil, a necessity, but evil. That's the view of conservatism. Government has to be curbed at all costs. The second, though, is the belief that through the ages it's been privilege, man-made, man-secured privilege, that more than anything else, to quote Balin, except the misuse of power, has crushed men's hope for fulfillment. That's populism. That's Andrew Jackson. That's the side that's in Mr. Obama's ads, against privilege. Mr. Romney incarnates privilege. His statement on the 47% was the sort of the utterance of privilege.
Not
contempt,
mentioned or referred to by the president last night, to the chagrin of many of his supporters.
Yes, his tax policies eliminate the estate tax. Privilege. Well, you know, if the president won't pick up his side of the argument, the side being made in his ads, is he embarrassed by that? Or is it that his own acculturation at the Harvard Law School and Columbia University, on and on, has just simply made him embarrassed by the populism that Andrew Jackson, that Franklin Roosevelt embraced and won with?
He put it in terms of numbers. They both did. A little tape here, and then we'll come to you, John Gale. But here's the back and forth over that $5 trillion that President Obama kept claiming was unaccounted for in the Romney plan.
Governor Romney's central economic plan calls for a $5 trillion tax cut.
Go through piece by piece. First of all, I don't have a $5 trillion tax cut. I don't have it.
You don't come close to paying for $5 trillion in tax cuts and $2 trillion.
Let me repeat what I said.
Sure.
I'm not in favor of a $5 trillion tax cut.
Okay, there's a montage of the $5 trillion, Gale. Was it about numbers last night? Was it about great positioning of this country going forward? Do you have to have really both to make a serious decision here?
Well, it was more about numbers than possibly some of the viewers would have liked at many points. And Romney had this great thing. Whenever the president made a point, Romney would say, no, I didn't do that. I didn't do that. And it's very hard, given the vagueness of the Romney plan, to, you know, poke it. It sort of squishes out all over the place. He's going to cut taxes, except that then some loopholes that are unnamed will be closed and somehow this will all work out. And if you don't think it does, then you're not paying attention, or you're just trying to be difficult. And Romney sounded very sincere and forceful about it. But it's true. The president's right. The numbers don't add up. It doesn't make any sense. But it doesn't do any – you can say that. But if the other guy keeps coming back and saying, no, you don't understand at all, it's hard.
Here was the president saying it boils down to math last night in Denver.
Now, 5 weeks before the election, he's saying that his big, bold idea is never mind. And the fact is that if you are lowering the rates the way you describe, Governor, then it is not possible to come up with enough deductions and loopholes that only affect high-income individuals to avoid either raising the deficit or burdening the middle class. It's math. It's arithmetic.
It's arithmetic, but somehow it did not, says the president, but it didn't really get in Mitt Romney's way last night. Let's go to Nashville, Tennessee. Terry's calling. Terry, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I watched a debate last night. I don't think Mitt Romney or Obama really, to me, didn't win. I'm more upset about what Mitt Romney said about PBS last night. I mean, he's going to cut it out. What else is he going to cut out for kids? I mean, this is a learning channel. Why can't they, you know, what else is he going to cut out? He didn't say last night. I mean, Obama should have fought back at him at that. No, his wife was on Big Bird Channel and everything.
Yeah, stand up for PBS, Mr. President. Of course, he said not only PBS. He said he'll cut a lot of things, but somehow, John Meacham last night, that didn't really seem to stick. The president kind of came back and said, look, he's gonna gut the investments we have to make, but I don't know if the president's really making his desired investments stick as a must-have object, John.
You know, the conversation about cutting Big Bird reminds me of an old joke about when the Wall Street Journal was solely a business paper. Mm-hmm. There was a question of how would they have covered the crucifixion, and it would have been how the peanut concession had done.
Oh.
I mean, just the question, that's just one of those programs that plays to the base. It's like the NEA in the 1990s, and it's almost insulting in a way that that scene is the great spending cut and the great courageous stand that Governor Romney made. Our fiscal problems are about all of us. This is a middle-class entitlement state by and large, and the number of transfer payments, the question of debt and deficit is about Medicare. It's about money coming to a broad number of Americans. It's not just the lower-income folks, everyone virtually. There's a great story in Time magazine a couple weeks ago about how from the time you get up in the morning to the time you go to bed at night, from the milk you put in your cereal, we all live a subsidized life.
Does that make you a Romney supporter, John?
Not at all, but it doesn't – what it does is I think it argues for people who – the very small number of independents or at least swing voters who are going to decide this election – have a huge responsibility not to let either side get away with acting as though this is somehow a simple problem to solve. If only you cut Big Bird, suddenly we're going to be on our way to being competitive again. That's I think, one of the least attractive aspects of these kinds of political events.
Well, I mean, in fairness, he did say he would cut more than that, said he would get growth, but he would not go for more taxes. Here's a little exchange, Obama-Lair-Romney.
There has to be revenue in addition to cuts. Now, Governor Romney has ruled out revenue. He's ruled out revenue.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Gail Collins, cuts aplenty. I think Mitt Romney was nodding to there last night, but Big Bird PBS was the one he named.
Well, what everybody wants, which is never going to happen in this campaign, is for both of these guys to get up and say, yes, you know, it's going to be hard, all the things that John just said. If, you know, if you're getting Medicare, I can't promise you that you'll have the options to pick so many doctors, or I can't promise you that end-of-life care, whatever. I can't promise you that if you're wealthier, you're going to continue to get Social Security at the same levels, something. But no, they're never going to do that. They just pretend one on top of the other that this is all going to work out without any difficulties.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about presidential debate number one last night in Denver, Colorado, and where it puts this 2012 race. Gail Collins of the New York Times is with us. John Meacham is here, author of American Lion, and soon Thomas Jefferson. Jack Beatty's with us, and you can join us as well. Here's Mitt Romney responding to President Obama's charge last night that Romney would not raise taxes on the wealthy for revenue.
The revenue I get is by more people working, getting higher pay, paying more taxes. That's how we get growth and how we balance the budget.
Right.
But the idea of taxing people more, putting more people out of work, you'll never get there. You never balance the budget by raising taxes.
You'll never get there, said Mitt Romney, the president, coming around to say, look, Mitt, if you've got a plan that does this, let's hear all the details. Why not lay them out?
At some point, I think the American people have to ask themselves, is the reason that Governor Romney is keeping all these plans to replace secret because they're too good? Is it because that somehow middle-class families are going to benefit too much from them? No, the reason is because when we reform Wall Street, when we tackle the problem of pre-existing conditions, right, then, you know, these are tough problems, and we've got to make choices. Right, and the choices we've made have been ones that ultimately are benefiting middle-class families all across the country.
Middle class, the kind of cornerstone of the president's talking points last night. Jack, you've got Paul Krugman blogging here saying, you know, enough with the theater criticism. Romney needs to be held accountable for dishonesty on a huge scale. What about on, I mean, there were lots of claims made last night, Jack, yeah, and lots of claims, you know, truth here, truth there. But what about what about the truth-o-meter?
Well, if you go to the website Think Progress, they have a score. Of course, it's all Romney's.
it's all anti-Romney.
Yes, anti-Romney. 27 myths in 38 minutes, and they source all this and they go through it. And they, but on the other hand, you've also seen people say the president's claim about his $4 trillion cut in the deficit, that that's smoke and mirrors. It really comes down to more like $2 trillion. That he misrepresented other things. On the other hand, you know, for sheer howler, I think the Romney campaign, the Romney claim, pre-existing conditions are covered under my plan. That's only for people who are continuously insured, meaning you won't be discriminated against because you suffer from pre-existing conditions. If you change a job and go to another job, but that's if you were insured. It says nothing about people who are currently uninsured. And those are the people, the 30 million, that are insured under Obamacare. And the president didn't make this elementary point of correction, almost as if he wanted to keep his favorables high. I like this guy. As if his advisors told him, don't be aggressive, be presidential, but also be likable. But he fell into a trap. And as people have been pointing out, four of the last five incumbent presidents have had terrible first debates. Reagan in 84, George H.W. Bush in 92, George Bush in 2004. It's as if they're prisoners of what George Reedy, LBJ's press secretary, called the Xanadu complex. Mm-hmm. You know,
have to be smacked around a little to wake up.
Yes, in Xanadu did Kublai Khan a stately pleasure dome decree.
Yeah.
You know, they just live in that world of deference and worship.
Not last night. Hey, Gail Collins, what about the truth, untruth, you know, trimming, truthiness factor last night on that stage?
Well, what I was dying for the president to say when Romney kept saying, you know, you can't tax your way into, you know, a better economy, mm-hmm, was that was exactly what Bill Clinton did. He raised taxes and the economy got much better and the deficit went away until George Bush came in and reduced taxes, and then we got stuck with these huge. It's exactly the opposite of what Romney was trying to argue, and that, you know, you just sort of wanted that punch in there.
You know, John, Mitt Romney mentioned Ronald Reagan a couple of times last night. Mm-hmm. President Obama mentioned Bill Clinton a couple of times, trying to channel a predecessor. But it seemed to me that Governor Romney was rather more successful in that channeling than the sort of doer president.
You know, after watching it last night, I was wondering who would be the first today to make the joke about could he just outsource the next debate to Bill Clinton send him. I think, you know, presidents when presidents turn to their predecessors rhetorically, it's almost always in an attempt to make themselves look better and to claim a mantle. And it is always, I mean, Reagan now is the ultimate security blanket for Republicans. One of the interesting things, what struck me was Governor Romney also invoked Clinton. And that's when that sort of historical analogy tends to work. One of the things that Reagan did so effectively is he used the language of FDR to really make a case against New Deal liberalism.
Mm-hmm.
When he talked about a rendezvous with destiny, a significant portion of the electorate understood that that had been FDR's phrase and that he was representing something different.
A different destiny in mind.
That's true. But one of the – I think one of the issues with this full flight, Democratic flight to Bill Clinton's formidable record is people know they aren't electing Bill Clinton. They're electing or not electing Barack Obama. They know they're not electing Ronald Reagan. They're electing or not electing Mitt Romney. And I think just sort of as a general point of what we've been saying, we wonder why people are disenchanted with American politics. It's because no one, to go to Gail's point, no one is actually willing, except in sort of a blue ribbon presidential commission way, to say, here's the actual truth. The one person in modern politics who did it lost 49 states. Remember when Walter Mondale said, I'm going to raise taxes, so will President Reagan. He won't tell you. I just
did. Goodbye, Mondale.
Goodbye, Mondale. But, you know, it requires a certain level of authenticity. And I think one of the reasons Governor Romney has had such a hard time unto this hour and may have a rough time going forward is people have had a hard time putting their finger on where he actually stands.
So that you can't handle the truth, nation, and so we sort of dance around with all kinds of stuff. Sandra in Wakefield, Massachusetts, you're on the air, Sandra.
Yes, hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. After this debate, I haven't changed my mind, and I think that Mitt Romney just really put a lot of effort and work into his debating skills. So he did look better in that way, but I still don't know how much to trust him. He's changing too much to represent him better. And I just wanted to see President Obama dodging Romney's attacks better, and because let's not forget that in the past 4 years that Obama was being attacked by Romney yesterday, that he didn't do what he promised to do. Let's not have short memory here, because after Obama took the office, he faced a situation that was much different than up to the point of his election. So,
That's quite true, Sandra. We've got it. And Mitt Romney making much last night of his depicting a failure to work across the aisle. But, of course, we know there was this iron wall that was not really interested at all in working with the president. Still, you think about another 4 years, what's it going to be? Pikeville, Kentucky, Eugene's calling. Hi, Eugene. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
You are the best at what you do, and this is my first time in. I just wanted to remark on a few things. A lady that called in a while ago had made it look as though Obama came off presidential and that type of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that Romney was a gentleman last night. Before last night, I had my own wonderings about him. I leaned his way, but I thought, I just don't know how he would perform, and you hear all the news, this and that, and everybody saying, but last night he came out, I felt he had Obama on the ropes and kept him on the ropes, and yet he was a gentleman about it. And as to the $5 trillion, he addressed that five or six different times and said, if you put people back to work, it's coming in through taxes. He made that very clear that that's where it was coming in through.
Eugene, I'm so happy to have your call, Eugene, but let me ask you, when he says that, you know, then President Obama says, well, we've heard that before, and look what happened. Do you have a fear of going back to what happened all over again on that Romney train or not?
No, I don't. And I know you can look back at things and say, look how things went. I think that he presented his case very well. The economy is going down the drain, and nothing that Obama has done in 4 years has helped that to turn around, but to go the other way. The $90 billion, whatever was spent on energy, that simply disappeared.
Eugene, I'm so glad for your call. I appreciate it. First time and every time. Come again. Let me get one more, if I may. New Orleans, Amanda.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I think that Romney managed to come off human last night because he managed to avoid all those polarizing topics that especially his, you know, vice presidential pick brings to the table, you know, i.e. women, immigrants, and like that. What do you think?
To stay away from the social issues? Now, I don't know what the structure is. Maybe we will hear more about those in debates to come, but then they just haven't been that huge on the campaign trail at all this year, Jack. Are we going to hear more culture war down the road in these debates, or is that going to be backseat to foreign policy and, most of all, economy, taxes, health care?
Well, they may not have figured in the ad so much, but they're figuring in the electorate. In this state, New Hampshire, there's a gender gap of over 20 points, and it isn't women vis-a-vis Romney. That is emblematic of a broader trend in other swing states, and it isn't matched by a compensating gain for Romney among men. He's doing better, but not nearly so much better. And what has created this gender gap? Well, I mean, the increasingly conservative, anti-choice, anti-contraception at one point, you know, the sort of culture war that the House Republicans have been fomenting, and Mitt Romney has sort of gone along with. And in the primary, he had to commit himself to some of those things. That isn't in the ads. It's in the electorate. Women seem to get it.
Yeah, and yet he didn't have the kind of challenge. I mean, maybe the president just thought, well, I'm going to stick with Jim Lehrer's program here, but he wasn't challenged on those issues last night, not on that stage. We've got two more debates to go. We're looking at the first. Samantha in Columbia, South Carolina. You're on the air, Samantha. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to say that I felt like Mitt Romney came off as though he had a God complex, and it really confuses me, you know, with interrupting the moderator, you know, over and over again, you know, making the comment that the president got to speak first and, you know, so I get the last word. I mean, you know, as another caller said, you know, it's very spoiled. And the last kind of person that you would want in the White House would be somebody with a God complex who's going to be, you know, quick to make decisions just based on his own, you know, ego.
What about the president's demeanor then, Samantha, if you're assessing that on the Romney side?
Yeah, the president's demeanor, I think occasionally he came off a little bit snarkier than I would have liked him to, but at the same time, I guess it's to be, you know, understood, and it wasn't nearly to the degree that Romney's was. I mean, I believe the moderator at one point even had to say, you know, Mitt Romney said, well, let's talk about this, and the moderator said, let's not, you know.
Well, the moderator, the moderation kind of got away from everybody there, from the moderator maybe in particular. Samantha, I appreciate your call. We got a little bit from each of the closing statements of the two candidates here. And let's just listen. We'll put Mitt Romney first. A closing statement focused on contrasting two different futures, he said, could result from the election in making promises.
There's no question in my mind that if the president were to be reelected, you'll continue to see a middle-class squeeze with incomes going down and prices going up. I'll get incomes up again. You'll see chronic unemployment. We've had 43 straight months with unemployment above 8%. If I'm president, I will help create 12 million new jobs in this country with rising incomes.
You can count on it, or maybe not. I mean, who knows? It's easy to promise. It's hard to do, but he was making his case. The president, interestingly, in his closing remarks, which got kind of jumbled up because of the way the format of the whole thing unraveled, got jumbled up with some remarks he was just making along the way. But he's talking here about a president willing to say no.
Part of leadership and governing is both saying what it is that you are for, but also being willing to say no to some things. And I've got to tell you, Governor Romney, when it comes to his own party during the course of this campaign, has not displayed that willingness to say no to some of the more extreme parts of his party.
Okay, Gail Collins, fair point. But twice, I think, in that last couple of minutes, we had the president, you know, as the president who will say no. No. Is that a winning closing statement for a presidential candidate now?
Well, we were just all saying we want these guys to deliver more bad news. You know, I think the message he was trying to make, which was possibly not as artful as it could be, is that Mitt Romney has changed so many times, and it appears to be he always changes whenever some new political force puts some pressure on him. You don't get this sense of a guy with a great spine standing up and saying, no, I believe in abortion rights, or no, I believe in fighting global warming, or no, I believe in whatever. He just changes whenever his foreign policy, which nobody got into last night, is just very much the product of forces within his party that are very, very tough on Russia, China, the pro-Israeli, you know, lobby. And you don't have any sense of the real Romney in there taking control and doing his own thing. I think that was the argument.
John, where's the debate last night leave this race?
Tighter. And one of the things that the president didn't mention, I think he mentioned it once, was the auto bailout, which is hugely important in a lot of swing states.
Ohio.
And it is still a very tough path for Governor Romney in the Electoral College, just sort of by any clinical measure. But it's gonna. People are going to look again. You know, it's 4 or 5% probably who are persuadables, and we'll see. I was thinking last night. Jefferson once said that the ground of liberty can only be gained by inches, and I was thinking, man, we are just crawling inch by inch,
inch by inch. What do you say, Jack? Back up in the air here this race, or how do you judge it after one?
I think Mitt Romney has won himself a second look. I think the electorate, that what he didn't get in the convention, what Clint Eastwood really prevented him getting, I think he's got it now. And we've heard from our callers, people are giving him a new look.
It is going to be fascinating to see in these next two debates how they each come back out. So grateful to each of you for being with us today. Gail Collins with the New York Times, author of As Texas Goes. Gail, thank you so much. Great to have you here.
Good to be here.
John Meacham, author of American Lion and Thomas Jefferson, The Art of Power Upcoming. Thank you so much, John.
Thanks, Tom.
And Jack, it's always great to have you right here. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.